All right, sort of the very pragmatic part. Carefully, what do we do as we walk through looking at our output? What are the questions that we ask and answer and describe to our reader? Step zero is make sure that you know what's going on bivariately. Make sure that you can tell the stories of the relationships between each variable and the criterion. One, because that may be useful information. And also because eventually you have to notice when the bivariate story and the multivariate story differ and figure out why. First question is, does the model work? Now, our SPSS cranks out this F-test in ANOVA and it gets you a p-value, but I want to show you this formula because we want to start talking about it. R-square is the variance accounted for. How well does the model do? 1 minus R-square is the variance not accounted for. Error. Like most effect sizes, we take variance accounted for over variance not accounted for, and that gives us an index of how well we did. The thing I want you to notice about the numerator is that we take that R-square and we divide it by the number of predictors. Well, this makes good old sense. A model with an R-square of 0.2 with 2 predictors is cooler than a model with an R-square of 0.2 with 60 predictors, right? I mean, on average, the predictors are doing better. And that's literally what's tested here. On average, how well do the predictors do? You want to be careful. We treat this as a test of how well the model does. It's more accurately thought of as how well do the predictors do on average when they're put together. That's not quite the same thing. And recognizing that what we're really testing is the average contribution of a set of variables will lead us to not make some mistakes later. We'll show you when we get there. Step two, how well does the model work? R square is the effect size. That's what we talk about. Nowadays, it's about all you're going to see. 30 years ago, R-square had not yet risen to prominence. And 40 years ago, it was a real nightmare, where you might see 5 or 6 different goodness of fit statistics for multiple regression. And those of you that had ever been around confirmatory factoring or structural equation modeling know that nowadays you often see 3 or 4 goodness of fit statistics represented. Okay? Either because they represent different things or we're still arguing about which one we like better. Usually it's because we're trying to take a one number summary and represent something that really can't be represented in a one number summary. And if you can't really get it all in one number, different versions aren't always going to match. Does that make sense? What we've done in multiple regression is we've decided that variance accounted for is the big piece of information we care about, and most of the rest of it is just sort of ignored. And we'll show you a couple consequences of that as we go. One of the things you will sometimes see is an adjusted R-square. It's an attempt to correct R-square for the inflation possible when the number of predictors is large relative to the sample size. I can find you people who love it. I can find you people who have tried to figure out how to make SPSS not report it. They dislike it so much. I know one guy who's done that successfully, and yes, he actually breaks into and reprograms each version of SPSS that he gets. Hands that out to his students, and his hope is that his students never see an adjusted R-square until they go somewhere else. Like most of the adjustments that are used in statistics, the following logic is applied. If we can't be right, be conservative. Okay? Sometimes a sample R-square underestimates the population R-square. Sometimes it overestimates. No matter what the ratio of predictors to participants, sometimes you underestimate, sometimes you overestimate. The adjustment is always down in this formula. That makes some people very comfortable because they think statistical conservatism is a wonderful and safe thing. It makes other people crazy because substituting conservatism for accuracy is really no more popular in statistics than it is in politics. Which variables contribute to the model? This one's pretty straightforward. for each variable, we get a test of the null hypothesis that the regression weight equals zero. In math, the way you take something out of an equation is to multiply it times zero. Right? If you weight it by zero, no matter what value ought to go in there, poof, gone. What we're literally asking is, can we huck this variable? Here's the problem. We often overinterpret this significance test. What the significance test asks, and all that it asks, is, does this weight, is this weight significantly different from zero? That's all it tests. We sometimes interpret it as, this variable doesn't contribute to this model. Aren't those the same thing? No, because of collinearity. Sometimes, when you take a non-contributing variable out of an equation, it changes the rest of the equation. You with me? And I'll show you examples. But you cannot interpret a zero regression weight as, whether this variable's in the model or not, the rest of the model's the same. You with me? Those don't go together. There are lots of circumstances where a variable is kept in a model out of completeness. Because when you pull that model, when you pull that variable out of the model, the rest of the world changes, I should say the rest of the model changes, and it changes in a way that hurts the accuracy of that that model reflecting the world. Because remember, each of these regression weights is supposed to be reflecting some kind of behavior. If you take stuff out, it changes the reflection. You're not trying to find a model where everything in the model contributes. You're trying to find a model that represents reality. Huge difference between those two. Huge difference. Because most of the time, and we looked at this on Wednesday, about 95% of the time, you want your model to represent reality. Only about 5% of the time are you really going to do prediction. When you're really doing prediction, efficiency matters. The only thing you care about is the size of that R-square. If a variable doesn't increase the R-square, it's not helping the prediction, it's not helping the prediction model. You with me? But you take a variable out of a model that's a theoretical model, and you're now looking at a different model. And that's why we started with the difference between correlational research, testing hypotheses, describing the world, and prediction research, which is trying to actually build the biggest, sweetest, cheapest Y prime we can. And we'll keep coming back to that distinction long after you're sick of it. Step four, which variables contribute most to the model? We have a model that works. Some variables contribute, some variables don't. It seems to be an incredibly natural question. If you take people who don't know anything about statistics and you tell them, well, we know that this, 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 and this influence behavior, a question that about 80% of them ask is, which one's most important? Okay? It seems to be part of how we think. We want to be careful when we answer this question. First of all, you can only compare betas, you can't compare Bs. Because Bs also reflect scale differences, not just contribution to the model. Careful comparison of the Bs. This is related to the question of whether one or more variables can be dropped from a model. Will it hurt me if I throw something away? It depends on what you're trying to do. When you throw things out of a descriptive model, you may make that model less descriptive. When you throw things out of a predictive model, all you're trying to do is be efficient. You can't bounce back and forth. You can't build a predictive model focusing on efficiency, caring only about the R-square, and then give it a theoretical interpretation. Does that make sense? You build a model for one purpose or the other. If you're doing descriptive research, it's all about completeness. Regression weights that are not different from zero tell you that variable does not have a unique contribution to the model. It doesn't tell you that that variable is not related. Here's a simple case. Think back to ANOVA. Think back to factorial ANOVA. Did you ever see an example of a variable that did not have a main effect but was involved in an interaction? Yeah. Well, what if every time a variable did not have a main effect, you said that variable is not important to behavior? You'd be making a horrible mistake. Same kind of thing here. Descriptive modeling is different than predictive modeling. Regression weights mean different things, and you have to take care of them differently. The last part is you've got to identify the difference between the bivariate story and the multivariate story, which is why Zero started with, make sure you know the bivariate story. You want to compare the multivariate with the R and or the bivariate regression weights. Couple of reasons for this. One, you want to tell the whole story. Second of all, if people have been doing bivariate analyses and they say instructional quality has an impact on grades, and you put instructional quality in a multiple regression weight with amount of time on task and the quality of the materials and prior learning of that student, suddenly instructional quality goes to zero most of the time. And so when you tell somebody instructional quality didn't matter in this study, you got to make sure that you don't say it that way and you say what you mean. There's a difference between it didn't matter in this study and saying while it was correlated, it did not have a contribution in this particular model. You with me? So if people have been doing bivariate analyses and you're about to feed them a multivariate analysis, they may see some things they didn't expect. Variables that are not correlated that used to be. Or on the flip side, variables that are in a model that don't have a simple correlation. What we'll call suppressor variables here in a little bit. Also, one last thing. Once in a while, you've got to decide if the fancy schmancy multivariate model is worth it. If the information you got out of the bivariate analyses and the information you got out of the multivariate analyses are the same information, depending upon your audience, you may decide to just report the correlations. Does that make sense? So you got to tell the whole story. You got to prepare people and explain to them surprises that happen when you shift from a bivariate analysis to a multivariate analysis. And sometimes you're not going to bother to drag them through the big, nasty, complicated analysis if you can accurately get them all the information more simply. That's particularly true when you leave the tower, when you're now talking to real people about their stuff. If a couple of correlations capture it, and the multiple regression doesn't change the story, save yourself and them. Lens.
Can you, back to the comparing, if they are the same scale, can you compare them, even if there's other predictors that aren't on the scale?
More so. But then you got to go back to that whole thing about, are they on the same scale in the population and in this sample? I mean, for example, say you're using MMPI stuff, okay, which is supposed to have a mean of 50 and a standard deviation of 10 because they're supposed to be t-scores. But if in your sample one variable has less variation, its regression weight is going to be influenced. You with me? So if they do have the same amount of scale, cool, not just if they're supposed to. But most of the time when you start doing that, someone's going to fuss. It's just safer and cleaner to do it based on the betas, no matter how similar the scales of the predictors appear to be. Great question.
Cal, is there a number that represents only the collinearity or the overlap of the variables?
Not that you will ever see. There is a statistic called commonality, which is estimated by working backwards from R square and the individual beta squares, but you go your whole life and never see one. It's one of those things that sort of fell out 30, 40 years ago because it just never seemed to tell us anything that we could use.
Seems like it might be something you would want to know if you're in the business of creating prediction models and you need to figure out how to make them.
Commonality and 1 minus R square are very highly correlated. If you just think about how much variance did we not account for, you get almost the same information. It's not mathematically the same, but it's highly related to it and good enough and has enough precision for what we usually do. Great question.
Okay.